Welcome to the Lex Tech in 10 podcast, a resource for Lexington teachers to learn about innovative technology to use in your classroom, as well as tips and tricks to streamline your workload. I'm Lisa Rhodes, one of the elementary digital learning coaches.
I'm Rachel Kuberry, the district's assistive technology specialist.
And I'm Ann Kim Tenner, the high school digital learning coach.
Just a reminder, the opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts and guests. Make sure you check out the show notes for more information, resources, and other podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's Lisa. Along with Ann and Rachel, we would like to welcome you to episode 6 of the Lex Tech in 10 podcast. Today, we will feature Alex Leonardo, one of the 9th grade English teachers. Before we begin, I would like to announce that we now have a professional subscription to Newsela, or Newsela, or I will spell it, N-E-W-S-E-L-A, which is an online news as literacy platform for active learning. This is for middle school, so please contact either Eddie Davey or Howard Wolke, the middle school digital learning coaches, for more information and support.
Hey guys, I am here today with Alex Leonardo, a 9th grade teacher of English up here at the high school. Hello, Alex.
Hi.
She is here today to talk to us about using technology in her classroom. I've worked with a number of kids in Alex's classroom, and I was really surprised by how technology is sort of pervasive through how you deliver content, have kids take notes, and have kids demonstrate their knowledge. And something I noticed in Alex's classroom was how she uses HyperDocs to do that. And then that the HyperDoc is sort of pervasive through the teaching that you do, really.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to talk about today. And I wanted to hear from you, Alex, sort of if you could explain to folks what a HyperDoc is.
Sure.
So that they understand that a little bit. And then we'll talk about how you use it in your content.
Yeah. So prior to putting devices in kids' hands, it became clear to me in my early years of teaching that having sort of long form note-taking paper was really helping kids stay organized and focused on whatever the unit of study was.
Okay.
How that's evolved is that now we're using the word HyperDocs, but basically what we're talking about is a set of Google Slides or a Google Doc that I have embedded various resources into and have aligned with the calendar of a unit so that students have places for each of the activities or each of the note-taking sessions throughout a unit where they then combine their own thinking and note-taking with the resources and the supports that I have like pre-embedded in that mm-hmm. document. So as we talk today, I'll probably talk mostly about slides because I actually think that works really well. What I love about slides is that kids can rearrange the slides easily.
Yes.
When it comes to studying for an exam at the end of the unit. They can take, you know, the couple that seem the most important and like stick them at the top.
Yep.
and that kind of thing. So I'm a big fan of using slides essentially as a notebook.
Yep.
And what we're doing is we're replacing the old school pen and paper notebooks that I used to have kids keep in the classroom. So,
but you're also like amping it up.
Yeah,
because
totally. Yeah.
You can put in resources that were impossible.
Correct.
To put into.
Correct.
A paper-based notebook.
I am of the mind. So if I talk about the short story unit that I teach at the beginning of the
mm-hmm.
year, for each of the short stories, they each have a resource slide that includes, for example, maybe an audio book reading of the short story, any sort of background information that I think might be helpful to a child who is either curious or would have a little bit more of a background. So for example, as I teach an excerpt from the Odyssey, I might put in, or here I did put in, John Green's crash course on who Odysseus is.
Okay.
Right. So just a couple of like supportive, let's think of them as optional clicks, right?
Yeah.
That a student might find that helpful. They might not. So I would say that probably 50% of my kids don't click on all the things,
sure.
But for kids who, who want more support that they're available to them.
And it allows you to offer that differentiation like right out of the gate. So kids don't feel different by asking for additional resources, and you don't have to mark kid X, Y, and Z as a kid that you need to check in with or distribute extra materials to, because a kid that you may not know has a deficit in background knowledge on this, or really just prefers listening to the audio version, will still have access to those resources, even though you didn't identify that kid. And so it does, you know, especially at the high school level, alleviate that burden and give kids the opportunity to work towards those real life adult examples that we have, where I am responsible for curating that list and knowing what works for me. You're doing some of that upfront work as a teacher by, and you said before when we were talking about curating the internet. So you provide those curated resources that as a teacher, you're like, this is all the good stuff. This is where you should go to get the information. And then sort of leave it up to the kids. I'd imagine sometimes you're like, no, read.
Yeah, no, right. Of course. So it's easier for me to walk over to a kid and be like, I really think this link is going to help you specifically. Yeah. So that's true. I also, let's say, for example, if I have ELL students in the room, what I like about pushing out a document like this to all of my kids via Google Classroom, it means that if later I find something that I think would be useful for a kid, I always have writable access to all of their notes. So I don't go in and check them that often. I don't think that that's something that I need to be micromanaging. However, if I have a student who could really use the Japanese translation of Romeo and Juliet as a resource, I can go and add a separate slide into that one individual student's notes, and nobody is the wiser, and that kid now has the resource that's embedded directly in their notes, which I prefer significantly to like emailing them separately.
Going somewhere different.
Send them somewhere different. Right. So it just keeps everything for a unit in one place. And now that all the kids have their Chromebooks, what I find is they generally like always have this tab open. Right. It's just like, these are their English notes. They know where they are all of the time.
And so it allows you within one document or slides to provide sort of all the course material that's needed for this unit. And so within your slides presentation, maybe links to other documents and surely links to websites and videos and that sort of thing. But students from an executive functioning perspective, of which all of our high school students are working on, it front loads that organization and also models like good organizational strategies moving forward.
We really try to talk about it as a model for how to do things moving forward. And over the course of the year, so it's early, right? I'm just finishing up like my second unit. These documents that I'm pushing out early in the year are pretty heavily curated. And there's very much like, here's a box for us to write our notes on today's discussion, right? And it's very prescriptive. My goal is that over the course of the year, I can become increasingly less prescriptive, leave more blank spaces to encourage students to either create formats that work better for them. Some students actually prefer to take all of their notes and sort of outline format in the speaker note box at the bottom of every slide. So like the slide is the thing my teacher created, but my personal notes are in the speaker notes. Like,
and that's another benefit of slides versus docs. You know, you use both of the tools, but for people who haven't used slides in a sort of unconventional, non-presentation way, that the visual presentation of slides is something I really like. The ability to move the slides around, you talked about. But then that speaker notes, that like additional place to add things, and then you still have the comments. Whereas in Google Docs, you kind of just have comments as like your other place to put information that doesn't disrupt that linear flow of information. And so that's a really nice point about how to use slides as a note-taking device.
I offer both to kids and allow them to choose. The content is the same. What I find is that if I have incredibly linear thinkers, they like a document because they want everything to go in chronological order.
Sequential order of what we talk about.
Right, exactly. They want
to remember it.
They want it to match the chronology of the course. Kids that don't think that way tend to choose the slides because they can move them around. I think they like only having to look at a discrete square of information and
information
to sort of break it into pieces. And what I have found, this is like, I think this is my third year of offering, I also offer a paper option for kids who really struggle with the screen and the distractibility factor of the screen. So of those three, there's only a few kids who take the paper, and then it's about a 50-50 split on who would prefer to use documents and who would prefer to use slides. And it totally has to do with the way they think. And we try to have sort of metacognitive conversations about like, what kind of a learner are you? What's going to support your
And what's nice is if I go into your classroom, your kids are using those three different types of resources, mostly with the same content. And it works. Like, the whole class is working together. I don't see a difference between like this kid needing help for this thing and this kid. Like, you're well-versed at knowing how the different resources work. The kid selected something that works for them. And so it's cool. Everyone's using something different, just like our teachers all use something different if we're in a PD session or something like that. And so sort of like embracing that in your classroom, I think, is something that might be uncomfortable transition for some people. But it looks so good in the end, and it really gives kids what they need.
It actually is something that they often say to me at the end of the year. It's one of the notes I get most frequently in like the year-end course review, that they really, I think they feel heard, and I think they feel like their individual learning style is being honored, even though for me, it's from a teacher's perspective, it's actually not that much more legwork to create three different sort of formatted versions of the same content.
Because you create the content once. And then you make it look a little different. So what else do kids, like, how else do kids give you feedback about this? They like that customization piece and they have some choice.
They definitely would prefer me to do more of the work.
Especially so, like as the, yeah, the year goes on.
And I start like being like, I don't know, what do you think you should put in the doc? Like, that they're like, oh, I want you to tell me the right answer. Yeah, there's some growing pains there, but I think those are good growing pains. I also,
do you think that kids ever take the structure you give them and as you work to increase that independence across your course through the year, do you think they ever take it to a different class?
I would hope so.
Right?
I would hope so.
Especially as they get older.
As they get older. That's the aspiration, right? So that if they leave my class understanding that slides can be a really effective version of a digital notebook. I think that that's really cool. I think that especially kids who were coming out of the middle school, and this will change, but we're coming out with iPads before and we're into using like EndNote or some, or Notability, some of the software that they were using on the iPads. I think they're seeing that there are options that could work really well for them. And I hope that they, I hope that they use them later. I think it's good to offer them a sense of there are ways to use the tools in maybe non-conventional ways or unconventional ways that could really support your learning.
And I think like as these kids are adults and are our age someday, not that we're old, but I think those sort of like conventional ways of using like word processing tools and presentation tools will be like, they won't even understand that. Whereas we're still stuck in a little bit of like how PowerPoint like was designed and worked. And now we're stretching that so far. I think that's going to be gone for a lot of the kids we're teaching right now, but we still hold on. At least like that's our previous use of it. So I want to hear about any stumbling blocks and anything, if teachers are jazzed about this, we're going to share an example from Alex in our show notes. But if teachers are interested in trying this, what advice do you have or what stumbling blocks do you want to flag a warning about?
So I think the hardest part is sort of knowing what you want to get out of an entire unit, and thinking about how long of a stretch of time do you want to create an individual document for? So if you're trying to teach an entire novel, it might be unrealistic to 1 or 2 years into teaching a prep have every resource you would possibly need for like an 8-week unit. And the way that I do this is I create the document and then push it out to the kids. And once they have their own copy, then they're off to the races to manipulate it.
And your connection to them has sort of broken. Like you said,
I can see it. I can see what they're doing, but I can't easily add new information or change them in any way and have it effective.
From like a group.
Yeah, for a group. I can go in and do an individual. If I have an individual student that I know needs an extra resource, I can go and drop it in for them, which is why I push it out through Classroom. I like having the access.
That end connection.
Yeah, like, right. That back end connection to their notes. I feel like I have a better sense of what's going on. Mm-hmm. It also gives me a better sense of how to talk to resource room teachers mm-hmm. or support staff about where a kid is at in assignments that are not assessed.
Yes.
Right? Which I think sure. is really powerful information when we're having adult conversations about yeah. kids. But it means you have to have like all your gear stuff in together. Order
yeah.
before pushing it out. And so I think that if I would encourage anyone who wants to try doing this to maybe do it for a week, right? Like yeah. a week's worth of content and yeah. push it out. I have colleagues who like number their documents. So yeah. like we're in document one, we're in document two.
So
and
as time goes on, they release sort of
the next stage of that
unit.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that the only way I've been successful in doing this for an entire unit is just because I've taught the prep so many times
yeah.
and have the content under
yeah.
my belt.
And even if like as a beginning user in this strategy, even if you don't end up changing something, if you chunk it down into part one, two, three, it would alleviate your anxiety about like, what if I want to change this?
Right.
What if I find better resources?
Right.
What if this thing comes up in class I didn't expect and I want to embed it?
Right.
So that's a great tip for people.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time, but is there anything else you want to share? Any tidbit or anything related to HyperDocs or otherwise?
I would just say that I think it's a very successful tool at offering students a multimedia experience. And as I'm flipping through my slides while we talk here,
yeah.
that I'm able to show them art in full color
yeah.
and the videos are already embedded in there. I think that it pulls kids into the material a little
yeah.
bit better and
yeah.
it gives us the opportunity to use the device to do things we really can't do on paper.
Really can't do it.
You really can't look at a piece of Renaissance art in the same way if you're not looking at it in color. And you
yeah.
can't zoom in and sort of look at the details. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage anyone to try it and just give it a shot and see
yeah.
how it might support
yeah.
what you're trying to do in the classroom.
And if it doesn't make sense to you, if this is something you haven't heard about at all, go to our show notes and take a look at Alex's example. We'll probably have another example because Alex is a high school teacher. So I have a nice example at sort of the elementary level too. So go there and look and see what this is all about, because I think it's a great strategy both for differentiation and for like modeling really nice organizational and executive functioning skills, because taking digital notes and as more content is provided to kids digitally, giving them strategies to organize that information, like your art and video examples. That's something we do in a ton of classes, but this gives kids the chance to have mm-hmm. all those resources in one place for later. They don't have to bookmark anything. They don't have to remember where I found this, where I found that. So.
Or have like a bunch of different links in Google Classroom.
Yes.
Right? It's like one link for all of the
all
things.
Stuff. It's all always
stuff.
There.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
All right. Thank
cool.
you, Alex.
Thank
this was
you.
Great.
Great. Awesome.
Hi, it's Anne here. And today I'm going to share some tips about Google Slides. Did you know that you can download free, fun templates from slidescarnival.com? Slidescarnival.com has tons of slides templates with themes and designs. Find the one you like, click Use as Google Slides theme, and it will create a copy in your drive when in Chrome. Did you know that there are also add-ons for just for slides? If you want your students to be interactive with your slides presentation in class, create a free account with PollEverywhere.com. Then download the add-on, Poll Everywhere. Then download the add-on and create in-slide interactive questions like word clouds, multiple choice, and more. Reach out to your building digital learning tech coach for help.
Thank you for listening to the Lex Tech in 10 podcast. Don't forget to reach out to any one of us or your building digital learning coach for questions and assistance. That's what we're here for. Also, check out our website, gg.gg/LexTechIn10, where you can find show notes and other resources. Do you have an idea for a future podcast? Would you like to be featured on a future podcast? Email us at LexTechIn10@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.